Hey, before we get started, I wanted to share with you about Kajabi. If you are an ambitious creative and are looking for ways to monetize online, I get asked all the time, what do I recommend as a tool? And I personally love Kajabi. I've been using them for over a year now and recommend them to all of my clients. In fact, I just got a text message, literally, who said that they are feeling more confident and excited about using this platform, and you can check it out. You can have a free trial by going to heatherparity.com/Kajabi. That is linked in the show notes. Start a free trial. You can host your courses and memberships and even your email list all in one place. And I love simplification. So again, go to heatherparity.com/Kajabi to start your free trial. If you're listening to this show, you are interested in building some kind of brand, whether it is your small business or maybe you are creating online content. There's something that you're doing that you want other people to know about. Can I get an amen in the back? Here's the struggle bus, though, pulling up in front of us, y'all. There's probably a million people doing exactly what you are doing. So how in the world are you going to stand out in the sea of other people? What's up, y'all? Welcome to today's episode. If this is your first time listening, my name is Heather Parody. I am your host. Today, we are going to dig into building a big brand for a small business. We have a returning guest, Jeremy Slagle, who's an award-winning graphic designer with over 25 years of experience helping small businesses build impactful brands. And he's just a cool dude. So he's going to answer this question, how do we stand out in the sea of other people? He's going to tell us what we need to do before we make our logo, how we can incorporate our own story while still making our clients, our audience, the focus, and why Victoria's Secret CEO should not share his story. But before we get started, if this is your first time around here, I invite you to hit that subscribe button. If you are a creative who wants to make a full-time living doing what they love, make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you have not done so yet, if you love the show, if you kind of like it, drop us a rating and a review. I'll give you a shout out on our Fidget Friday episodes in all day. All right, y'all, so you ready to do this? Building a big brand for a small business with Jeremy Slagle. You know, on your website, you say that you start with story. You always start with story. I come to you and say, I want a logo. And you're like, well, what's your story? Why don't we start there?
Any strong brand identity has a good story behind it. Our brains, when we see a logo or we see a brand, they kind of hit like a surface part of our brain. When we have an emotional response to a story or a brand, when we hear that deeper story, the motivation for why the brand was started. Sometimes, you know, you'll hear some of the most compelling stories are like, you know, my child had cancer and I found that there was a need for this in the medical field. So I put together my entire life savings and I worked to put together this product so that no other child had to go through what my child went through. Yeah. So you could, you know, come across a medical device or something and just be like, oh, that's a brand, that's a logo, you know, but when you understand the motivation and the story behind the brand, all of a sudden it moves to a deeper part of your brain that absorbs and holds onto the story. And then it connects that story to the identity of the brand. So I have someone I worked with a few years ago, and she makes the most amazing Bavarian pretzels. And she's located here in our what's called the North Market here in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. She was working for a German auto parts manufacturer, going over to Germany, coming back to the U.S., going over to Germany, coming back to the U.S., working to with the manufacturer on these parts, which she was okay with. Like, it wasn't her dream job, but it was. She was good at it. But when she was spending all this time in Germany, she's also vegan. And if you know much about German food, it's almost all prepared in some sort of a meat sauce or extruded into a casing. And so she was like, I can't find any good food here. So she ended up meeting a family that was a multi-generational Bavarian pretzel baking family. And they connected on a deeper level to the point where they made really good friendship. And then that family started inviting her to come back, like, let us show you how we make these. Let us show you and share our joy for pretzel making with you. Well, she took that joy for pretzel making. She came back home, started making it at home, shared it with her family and friends. And then they all started placing orders for it. Fast forward 5 years after selling her stuff at the local farmer's market and all that, she now has like multiple locations where her love for pretzel making is now, you know, she shares it with the world. But understanding the story and how she got to it and the reason she did it embeds the story deeper into our minds, and it allows us then to help to share that story with somebody else. It makes you feel like you're an insider, and humans always like to be insiders.
I guess where I get confused on that, Donald Miller's book, Story Brand, it really, I was really impacted by that book, but I also have a lot of questions about it because I believe wholeheartedly, and I've bought things and collaborated with people based off of their story. So figuring out how do we marry our personal story with also making mm-hmm. the client and the customer the hero mm-hmm. of our brand. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends on the product.
Really?
Some products are very tied to an individual's story. We have the limited brands, L Brands, located here in Columbus, Ohio. We have Victoria's Secret is one of those brands. The owner of, and founder of Victoria's Secret's name is Les Wexner. He's an old white guy. How would you tie Victoria's Secret
brand? So many comments about that.
Right. How would you tie Victoria's Secret brand to the old white guy, right, that runs it? So you can't. So you can't tell a story, Victoria's Secret story, through the eyes of its founder because it just doesn't make sense. I have a good friend who was one of the original creative directors for Bath & Body Works. They're also based, they're part of the L Brands family here in Columbus.
When you say L Brands, forgive my ignorance. What is
okay.
L Brands? What do you mean?
It's the limited.
Limited
brands.
Okay.
Yeah. At some point they spun off. I don't know all the details behind it. I'm sure someone will comment below. But basically, you know, you've got Abercrombie & Fitch, Bath & Body Works, The Limited, Express. Like there's a whole bunch of these companies founded in, by the same company. So she was one of the original employees that worked in the creative department for Bath & Body Works when there were literally a dozen stores nationwide. So if you think about how many there are now, like it was very, very early on. And what they found was that left to their own devices, the managers at all these stores would kind of come up with their own story for what Bath & Body Works was. Nobody really understood what Bath & Body Works was. So in their situation, they went back to the drawing board and created a fictional character named Kate. And they wrote an entire story, what her favorite food was, where she went to school, what books did she like to read. Like they had this incredibly in-depth story of Kate, and they still use Kate as their what would Kate do when they make business decisions.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So Kate is a fictional character, but they have created this this entire brand around a non-existent fictional character. So sometimes it's about the individual that founded it. But again, Bath & Body Works, Les Wexner, you wouldn't want to think about Les when you're thinking about what you would buy for skin lotion. You know, when you look at someone like a Jenny Britton who created Jenny's Ice Creams, it's mm-hmm. got to be about Jenny Britton. That's what the story has to be about. But in other situations, you have larger brands like Coca-Cola or Nike, and it can't be about an individual. In those situations, the story has to be more of a strategy that's focused towards the consumer.
What if our story is not interesting and nobody wants to hear my story and blah, 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 because I'm sure you come across that a lot.
Sure. Well, and it doesn't need to be, you don't necessarily have to have a crazy interesting story. But what you do need to be able to do is explain what motivates you to be different from your competition. I have a lot of people that call me and they say, like, I am going to start a bakery. And I say, great, let's talk about that. They say, well, you know, my family tells me I make the best cupcakes on the planet. I'm like, that's great. Your family's always going to tell you that you make the best cupcakes on the planet. But what makes your cupcakes better than everybody else's? And it can't be, I just make good cupcakes and everyone in my family tells me I make the best cupcakes.
You got to stop talking about cupcakes, Jeremy.
I'm sorry. It really comes down to how do you, when you take those cupcakes, I know I just said it again, but if you take those to the local farmer's market, right? And you sample them out and you have 100 people on a Saturday come and you watch them sample that and you sell a couple and they come back the following week and they come back and say like, I've never had a cupcake like that. And I think it's because of this. Like, it's just so good. And this is why. A lot of times it's like you said earlier, telling your own story is really, really hard. And sometimes you have to put it out there and listen to other people help you understand what's different about what you do. And it might not be easy for you to put your finger on. So
yeah,
I do a lot of work with food. 100% of the food brands I've worked with that started in a farmer's market have been very successful and have gone gangbusters. Those that choose, that think that they can skip past that phase, doesn't normally go well for them, honestly, because they have this preconceived idea of who they are. But a lot of times, especially with food products, you learn so much from testing that product and being face to face with that client. So you might try something different, like for instance, making a salted caramel ice cream. Well, up until Jenny did it, nobody had even heard of salted caramel ice cream.
Yeah.
But she put it out there and it sold like crazy. And then she's like, hey, I'm gonna add some, you know, hot pepper flakes to peanut butter and make a Thai chili. No one had ever put hot pepper flakes in ice cream before, but she did. And so it helped her define her brand. So while everybody else is making mint chocolate chip and cookies and cream, she's going, no, I'm gonna focus on the people that get what I do. And I'm gonna, and there may be people who will never in a million years taste ice cream that has hot peppers in it, but I don't really care about them. I'm interested in the people who get my brand.
Tell me if you've seen this before. I've seen a lot of clients I work with. When we talk about getting feedback, whether it's an online program or a course or something that they're building, I think everybody kind of wants to run to surveys because it's a little intimidating to get that face-to-face direct feedback because what if somebody doesn't like it and so forth? Like, have you ran across that where people are resistant to actually getting into the market, the farmer's market, and getting this face-to-face combat with their product? And also, are there other unique ways to kind of get that feedback outside of just like throwing out a survey?
You know, whether it's sampling your product at a marketplace or something like that, even if you're not selling it, you're always going to get biased feedback when you put the question in front of biased people. So the hard part is trying to find an authentic opportunity for feedback. I'm not a fan of putting groups together and having somebody lead a discussion about a product because there's always the alpha person in that discussion that basically hijacks the entire conversation. And then you have a bunch of sheep that follow in and just add on to that. So the trick is, what's the best way for you personally to get the best feedback? I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with asking people to fill out a questionnaire. I think what's more important is how do you ask the questions? What kind of information are you trying to gather? Always having the opportunity to follow up. If somebody has something interesting as a response, then it gives you an opportunity to kind of dig a little bit deeper. So you can always follow up with someone who filled out a survey and say, I want to know more about why you answered this question this way, to dig a little bit deeper in those ways. And I think you can uncover some really good information that way.
What's a good question versus a bad question?
I like kind of more open-ended questions. So it's not like you're not asking a question, did you like it? Did you not like it? Right.
Did you eat the cupcake?
Right. Exactly. It's more along the lines of tell us your experience with the cupcake. Help us understand how this cupcake was different in good ways or bad ways from other cupcakes you've had.
Very good. You know? Yeah.
And open-ended questions that aren't yes, no questions, allow the person to feel like they have an opportunity to actually be heard as well. It's not just like click the little radio button, yes or no, or rank it 1 to 5. There's places to have those kinds of questions, but open-ended questions will always lead you to better, deeper questions. We were working with branding a small university in Northern Ohio, and the strategist and I were working together, and branding universities is really, really hard. It's one of the hardest projects I do. And that is because everybody is trying to compete with each other to get that market share. And we are big fans of authenticity. You know,
my company partner.
Yeah, yeah. My partner and I, whoever happens to be working with me on the strategy and the storytelling part, we were working with this small university and we were trying to, you know, you hear people say things, but sometimes you wonder if it's just an echo chamber, right? Like, are you saying this because you've been here for the last 20 years, you're basically recycling all the talking points that you've heard, you know, that they've been kind of planting in your brain all this time that you've been here. And this is why our university is better than every other university. And one of the conversations we were in a group of faculty that, and I believe it was faculty that had been there for 15 years or longer. So we break it up into all these different constituent groups so that we can kind of get a feel for like what this demographic thinks versus what this demographic thinks. One of the people just off the cuff, just threw out, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's why we don't have tenured faculty. And then they just kept talking. And we were like, okay, stop. Wait. You've been around for over 100 years as a university and you don't have tenured faculty. And they were like, well, yeah. Okay, let's unpack this. Like, why don't you have tenured faculty? Like, that's something that most people that go work at a university, that's like what they want to achieve at some point in time. But you're telling someone who comes to work for you, don't bother because we don't offer it and we never have. So that led to the next question, which was, why don't you have tenured faculty? And they started just, they all chimed in. And it was things like, well, you know, we believe that faculty should be in the classroom and not off writing papers and instead being taught by student aides or teacher's aides. Like, we think that the faculty should be actually there. We would rather have our faculty speaking from actual experience and not somebody who we hired simply because they've only been in academia their entire lives. So those are the kinds of things that it just, what it came down to is we do things very different here. We really don't care what other colleges say as far as like how many tenured faculty they have or how many papers or research papers they've written. That's not who we're chasing. We really, really want to be different. We want to be practical. We want students that come here because they just want to get a job someday, not because they're here to find themselves. And that was one of the things we found is so many colleges and universities are like, come and find yourself here, you know? And
expensive.
Right. It's an expensive way to find yourself. But when you're working with a school that's literally saying like, we don't chase any of that stuff, then you can go, okay, so basically what you're saying is you want students that aren't really looking for the college experience. They're looking to like get trained by people that have actual experience on the job and like get a career. And they're like, well, yeah. And so those are the kinds of things that come out of those kind of more open-ended conversations. And then you can kind of go, oh, that's a great response. I want to know more.
So I respect and think it's super cool that you go into this depth with people. Like, you actually visit their facilities, you dig into their story, you want to sample the products. Like, it's a thing to work with you. Like, you make it an experience. And I think that's super cool. What I'm curious about is how does that actually inform design and like the colors you use and the fonts and all that? I'm super curious about that process because you get all this information. I've figured out what makes me different. I figure out my story. How does that inform you when you sit down with endless amounts of colors and fonts and design? How do you use that information?
Sure. I had the opportunity a few years ago to do the athletic branding for a small community college in Everett, Washington. And they are situated, I believe it's the Cascadia Mountains. They are situated in some of the most breathtaking mountain ranges that our country has to offer. And I insisted that I come out and meet with their athletic teams, their athletic director. I wanted to meet with all of their administration. Like, I wanted to really hear what was different about them. And I always ask clients after they've worked with me, why did you choose to work with me over somebody else? And he said, well, you guys came in about the same price wise, but you're the only one that insisted to come out and meet with us face to face. So when it comes to like my mood board, so one of the first steps of all my projects is to put together mood boards that say like, this is kind of what other people are doing. Here's some other brands that I think are going to meet your target audience. After meeting with these students, finding out where they live, it almost had like an REI sort of feel to everything. People come to or live in Everett, Washington because they love the outdoors, because they love the mountains. I would put a very different brand identity together for a university, you know, outside of Seattle, Washington, than I would for one that's in Miami or, you know, in other parts of the country, because, you know, students choose schools oftentimes because of what surrounds it, what other things that they have to offer. And a lot of times the goal is for us to help communicate and attract those students. So, you know, if it's in Everett, Washington, then we should have a little bit of that outdoorsy REI sort of vibe to the whole thing. And that's important.
And that's why you suggest that when people first start off, I think it, not to quote you exactly, but something along the lines of go ahead and just put your initials on something, get a logo out there and do the work, do business for a while to understand your story and what makes you different before you invest in like a branding kit and really working with someone like you who's a professional, because really there's nothing to pull from there if we're just starting off.
Right. And there's some people that have it. They've got it figured out. It's rare.
Out of the gates.
Yeah, it's rare, but it happens sometimes.
What's different about them? Like, what's why?
Well, so for instance, the example I mentioned about like someone whose child, their story is more about like my child was dying of cancer and I needed to put this thing together. And so now they've gotten their funding and they've got this whole thing. And so we go, okay, you have your story is based on your previous experience. What led you to this experience? There's obviously more nuance to it than that, but that's a different kind of story than how my cupcakes, how I ended up refining my product to make a very specific type of cupcake. You know, through that process of using, putting your product out there at the farmer's market, you're going to get feedback from people that's going to help you also really refine and focus what your offering is, right? You're going to go, okay, these are the four flavors. These are the four flavors that just knock it out of the park every time. Sometimes, a lot of times people are surprised by that. They're like, I would have always thought it was the vanilla that was going to go gangbusters, but it wasn't. It was this one over here. And what that allows you to do also is go, if these are the hits, then what are other things that are in that sort of family that I haven't explored yet or no one else has explored yet? There's a difference between, a lot of times brands want to be all things to all people. Like, we don't want to alienate a demographic. We don't want to, but honestly, like, your best success is going to be to create something that's your own path, that is going to create a product that is going to not necessarily make everybody happy, but you're going to have a very passionate following. Because if you're creating something that makes everybody happy, it's probably easily reproduced by somebody else that may have more money and more assets than you do. And they end up basically like taking over anyways.
So good. So good. I have some questions from our listeners. If you're ready to roll into some of those, these are really good. Karen Hamilton asked, how much me is too much in business?
That entirely depends on your business. That is completely depends on like, are you the product? Are you the product you're selling? To a certain extent, my business is called Slagle Design because I'm the product I'm selling. My capabilities, my creativity, what the solutions and the process and the way I do it is what I offer people. If Karen is a writer, or works, you know, whatever, even a bookkeeper or what have you, the way that she goes about doing what she does is so unique to her and that experience and that relationship, then you can't have too much of you in your brand identity, right?
Yeah.
I do a lot of bicycling. If you go to my website, you're going to see bicycles all over it.
I have so many questions for you. I did a triathlon a couple years ago and I just got to ask you later, but biking is hard. Oh my God.
Of all of the triathlon stuff, that would be the one thing I would probably do best with cycling. I'll running and swimming, I'm not good at. So maybe we could like do some sort of a crazy
tag
triathlon.
Team.
Yeah. So I'll do the cycling and you do the running and swimming. And
I thought I was fine on the bike and then I got off of it and I literally fell over. I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. And then I fell straight over. Anyway, I'm sorry. Back to you.
That's hilarious.
So you're a biker.
Yeah. So if you look at my website, I've got bicycles all over it.
You do?
And part of it is also I use the concept of a bicycle to help explain why I do what I do and the process of why I do what I do. And so when I speak at conferences, my story is called Always in Tandem. It's like, why is it important for us for us to work in this way? Like, why is it best for the client and best for the creative process? That's a lot of me injected into my brand. It's stuff that I love to do. If you're Les Wexner and you sell lingerie to women, it's probably best that you stay as far from you in the brand as possible. Those are the kinds of things where it's like, the answer is, I wish I could say for sure, but it has a lot to do with how tied your personality and your relationships are through your brand.
Excellent. Marshall Davis asked, what are things I can do to differentiate my small brand from the next guy?
That is a great question. Again, it goes to this idea of not chasing what everybody else is doing, right?
And setting
your own. That's way easier said than done. I think a good way to kind of relate that would be to say, like, if I'm a college student and I'm in graphic design, you'll hear it all the time, or illustration, they're always saying, well, I'm trying to find my own style. I think a certain bit of that is important, but at the end of the day, your style bubbles up from within you. It's not something you can really go find.
So, tell me more. What do you mean?
When a friend of mine and I co-founded and ran an agency for a number of years, we went through the process of creating our own logo and our own brand. And it was probably the hardest project we did in the 12 years we were in business. You would think that because it's what we do every day, that would be the easiest. It's not.
Right, right.
So we had to kind of do like an out-of-body experience. And we went to New York City for like 4 days. We left our surroundings. We walked away from the office. We forgot about the fact that we were trying to create our own brand. Hmm. And we walked through stores, we walked through parks, we walked through, and we just took pictures of stuff that were like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. This really resonates with us. And this is why. And so we just took notes and notes and notes and notes. But it was all specifically for us, what resonates with us, what makes us tick when we see good design. And so we kind of had to like back into our logo by seeing what things we agreed on in our branding. And we ended up creating our brand that way. And it worked out really, really well. I think sometimes we become like super myopic and we just kind of focus too much on like, I got to fix this. Like, I got to find my own style. Well, that's great. But your life and your style is a result of like your travels. It's a result of where your heart is. Like, it's where your treasure is. And so I think, you know, you really have to take a lot of that stuff into consideration when you're creating your own brand.
Oh, so well said. I know it's tempting for me. I'm very type A and somewhat of a workaholic to think it's unproductive to like step away from it. But you're so right. I feel like every major download I've ever gotten has been when I'm outside, when I'm away from everything. And that's when like God is like, Heather, Heather, Heather.
Yep.
And I hear the next thing.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I find that like I have great concepts that come to me in the middle of a yoga class.
Yeah.
It's when I stop thinking about it and focusing on it that something comes to mind a lot of times. So
come on. Lisa David Olson asks, what are current trends you are seeing in branding that are simply overdone or off the mark?
I have a lot of respect for a guy named Aaron Draplin. If you're not familiar with his work, I think he is one of the best. And not only that, he's a great speaker at conferences. He has a real heart for people. And his work is fantastic. Unfortunately, it became so trendy, his work, that people have just completely, like, they're just knocking it off left and right. Yeah.
Like a Gary Vee thing all over again.
Yeah. You're starting to see, you know, it's been happening for a little bit now, but this really thick, chunky geometric lines that you go, oh, that's totally Draplin. And then you look at it and you go, no, that's somebody else ripping off Draplin. There are certain trends like that you'll find that people are doing. But what I love is seeing things that like the guys at Lincoln Design are doing, where they're just creating these awesome, not just logos, but like straight up like extensive brand identity packages, where it's not just one logo, you know, used the same way every time. It's just more like a brand visual experience. That's one of the things I actually love to see. But as far as like what's being done, I'll be completely honest, and this may sound horrible, but like, I don't really look at the trends that much. I don't really, I try to create stuff that has a really long shelf life. So a lot of my stuff you might look at and go, that's kind of like vintage or retro, or has a little bit of like a Americana sort of feel to it. And I find that a good brand like that can last a good 10, 15, 20 years. Whereas if you're kind of creating something that's very now, it looks dated pretty quick. So,
well, that's what Chip and Joanne Gaines, I believe, their kind of philosophy behind it. My husband is obsessed with them.
Have you read his book? Have you read Chip Gaines' book?
Brian has been like on my tail to read that because he's obsessed with them. I haven't yet, but he's read it. He loves it.
Do yourself a favor and get the audiobook, because Chip Gaines reads it. And it is a riot. And what's great about it is he's so self-deprecating. Like, all of his humor is so self-deprecating, and he's just a brilliant guy. We got it for like a long car trip. I don't remember. We were driving to like South Carolina or something like that. And I put the first disc in, and my entire family, I had kids that were like in middle school at the time. We listened through the entire thing, and we laughed out loud through the whole thing.
Cool.
So yeah, Chip reading his own book is well worth listening to.
I'll link up everything you mentioned in the show notes, y'all. So if y'all want to check that out, join me in that. I'll just take one more question just for time's sake. This comes from Jen. I thought this was a good one. When creating a logo or brand, should I do it according to my preferences or my clients? She's concerned about marrying the you-ness of a brand, but also being empathetic and reaching others. How do you find the balance of both?
I don't feel like it should be an either or. Like, I don't know that you could create a logo that is so you that it would offend or chase away potential clients. Because at the end of the day, it's kind of like bait on a fishing rod, right? So like, you're going to attract the kind of clients and work with the kind of clients that you're going to want to work with. And if you're like one of those people who's just like super brash and like it's straight to the point and tough love, like, I'm going to tell you exactly what you need. You don't want people that don't want that. Like, you don't want to create a following from people. So you really should create a brand identity that is a reflection of how you're going to work on or have that person expect to work on. I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. It's your voice. Your brand should be your voice.
Your vibe.
So if you're super quiet and, you know, and you just, you like to slow it down and take it slow, and people are looking for someone who's like, it seems like every time I've worked with someone that does X, Y, and Z, they just rush ahead and they don't take the time to really get to know me, then creating a brand that shows like, no, this is how I do it. I slow things down. We take our time. We make sure we do it right. There's nothing wrong with either side of that, but you want to make sure that whatever bait you put on your hook is attracting the kind of fish you want.
That's not like a Southern analogy. I like that one. Track those rock fish.
That's right.
Before our very last question, I want to give a big shout out to Jeremy for coming on today's episode. Make sure you connect with him at slagledesign.com. It's a pretty sick little website. He's done a really good job with it. Also linked up in the show notes is our previous interview where we talked a little bit spirituality. So if you want to go there with Jeremy, look no further than our show notes. So before this last question, I just want to wish you the very best today. We're cheering you on. We're in your corner. And let's end it with this. So I've kind of gone through a whole identity thing with myself lately with the show and unconventional leaders. And, you know, when I met you, we started leaning more into creativity. And this question kind of popped up of like, do we want to keep the word leaders in there when we're talking about creative brands and creative work? And I kind of got some feedback that people didn't really resonate with leaders, but I've decided to put my stake in the ground and hold true to it because I really believe that creative work is leadership. And there's so many ways to lead creatively and that the creative path matters. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a messy question. You can approach it whatever way you want to, but I would just love your thoughts about, you know, how we can lead creatively, creative ways to lead, and just, I guess, your thoughts on seeing leadership as a creative person.
Sure. I guess it depends on what your definition of leadership is. How would you explain leadership in the context of your brand?
For me, it is intentional, positive influence. We all have influence, right? Mm-hmm. And it's using it intentionally to make some kind of positive impact in the lives of other people.
Okay. So I think the first part is helping people understand what your definition of leadership is. There's so many books out there on leadership. There's so many corporate leadership, things like that.
Oh my gosh, I know.
A lot of times people think that leadership means climbing the corporate ladder and getting, you know, getting a higher position or more pay or what have you. And that's a legitimate definition of leadership, right? But what it sounds like to me, you're saying, is it's almost more like, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost a humility. It's almost a leadership, not necessarily the way that the corporate world might define it, 100%. But more along the lines of how do I lead by example and help other people to be inspired by what they do. I think that's a different kind of leadership. So I think part of it for you, the trick for you is taking a word like leadership that has lots of different
heavy
definitions,
yes,
and helping people understand what that means. Does that mean I only work with creative people that have climbed the corporate ladder and now like chief creative officers of these businesses? Or am I looking to creative leaders as people that I can go, they're a great example of how I want to run my business, whether they happen to be head of a Fortune 500 company or not, right?
Yeah.
So that's the trick. So I think I just rabbit trailed off of your actual question, though. What was the question?
I really dug that, though. The question is, I just wanted you are a creative. You work primarily with creative-ish businesses, right? I guess the opportunity to lead creatively, like what have you seen? How do you see your work as leading?
Okay. Yeah. So I have a podcast that I do. I've been remiss in doing any recent episodes, but it's called the Joy Venture Podcast. And
I love the name, by the way.
Well, thanks. One of the key components of that is sharing spreading your joy with other people. I think that's, to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that to me is where that leadership side comes in. And that is,
absolutely.
I've been doing this for 20 years. And now I have this wealth of information or wealth of knowledge or experience. Now, I can keep that all to myself, or I can use it to better other people's lives, help them with their careers. That to me is where that opportunity for creative leadership comes in.
Very cool.
How do I take that knowledge and how do I take that and say, like, I'm not just going to keep it to myself. Do you write a book? Do you do a podcast like you're doing? Do you become the next Gary Vee? Like, what do you do to help spread that information, share that information so that you're not just like keeping it all to yourself, but you're actually using it to better society or better the other people that are doing the same thing you are in your industry.
Hey y'all, before we go, if you've not connected with me over on Instagram, head over there right now. It's at Heather Parody, P-A-R-A-D-Y. I would love to get to know you over there. Again, that is at Heather Parody, P-A-R-A-D-Y.